Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Sai Ram and respectful greetings to all our listeners from the team at Radio Sai. Thank you for joining us on Thursday Live, coming to you from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and I will be your host for this segment, Morning Glory. And yes, with Swami's grace, audio engineer Yatharta and I hope to bring you an inspiring lineup of programs this morning. Today is the 27th of December 2012, which means this is the very last segment of Thursday Live for the year 2012. The time in our studios right now is 9:38 a.m. and the ever-uplifting Vedam and Bhajans have just concluded in the Sai Kulwant Hall. The Sai Gayatri is still going on while devotees are proceeding to the Holy Mahasamadhi for Darshan. What a week we have had here in the abode of Supreme Peace. It feels as though heavens have descended into Prashanti Nilayam to spread joy and love among the devotees. And do we have the world melting into this pot or what? Right from the Seva Dals from the northernmost state of India, Jammu and Kashmir, to Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh in central India, to every single state of India, we have the great Indian pageant of loving service in action here. And add to the mix a globally diverse population from every single continent and over 100 countries. Wow, what a fragrant potpourri of the human race. And true to Bhagwan's teachings of universal love and oneness, Christmas 2012 was celebrated on a grand and heavenly scale with choirs and dramas, incredibly beautiful decorations by the New Zealanders, and some very inspiring and moving speeches. Everything about our Prashanti Nilayam is divine. The festivities, the weather, the smiling faces of the entire human race peacefully sharing their space and devotion. And behind such harmony and diversity is the underlying love of the one being, just one single entity, the Supreme Godhead and personal God to millions, our beloved Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. At Radio Sai, we bow to His glory and His splendor again and again. Now for today's episode of Morning Glory, I have two exciting programs lined up for you. We have a distinguished guest in our studios right now. We'll hear from her shortly. This live conversation will be followed by a group interview with four Sai youth from Australia. To start off Morning Glory, under the spotlight today is Dr. Deborah Ellens. Dr. Deborah Ellens is an independent scholar residing in Claremont, California, USA. Just 2 days ago at the Christmas 2012 celebrations here at Prashanti Nilayam, a vast assembly of global citizens heard a powerful speech by Dr. Ellens in which she spoke of her love for Jesus Christ and her understanding of Baba's universal teachings. Dr. Deborah Ellens was raised in a Christian household mainly in Michigan, USA. Her father was a Presbyterian minister. Her impressive curriculum vitae include a master's degree in systematic theology from Fuller Seminary, Pasadena, California. Dr. Ellens earned her PhD in Hebrew Bible from Claremont Graduate University in Southern California. At Radio Sai, we are honored to have a person of Dr. Ellens' credentials on Morning Glory. Saram, Dr. Ellens, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live.
Thank you.
Congratulations at the outset on that powerful and inspiring speech that you delivered in the Sai Kulwant Hall day before yesterday on Christmas Eve, Christmas evening.
Yes, thank you. That I think is proof that God exists.
No, you're being very humble.
Because I was very sick and in the hospital up to noon, and many people were praying for me, and the fact that I was able to give it that evening is proof that God exists and Swami is with me and hears prayers.
You're right, absolutely, considering what you mentioned, how sick you were. Yeah. Dr. Ellens, I understand you were raised in a Christian background with your father being a minister. Tell us more about your upbringing and the conversations that surrounded you through your childhood.
Well, from a very young age, I cannot remember a day when we did not, I was not praying. We had a sadhana that we did as a family. We prayed before and after every meal. We read scripture after every meal. Every Sunday was a day of rest. We went to catechism and Sunday school. And Also, the first 3 years of my schooling were in a Christian school. So,
Solid background. Now, clearly you had a very good exposure to religion growing up. Why and how were you then drawn to Swami?
I would have to say that my experience of Christ was not from scriptures. It was not from dogma. It was not from even, I mean, the teachings and all of that facilitated my experience of Christ. But the experience was a true inner experience. And that inner experience was of one piece with my inner experience of Sai. In other words, when I saw Sai, it was the same signature as my experience of Christ. Mm-hmm. There was no, it was a continuum of one piece.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to explain a little bit that about the inner connection you had with Christ prior to coming to Baba?
Well, I prayed to him constantly. He always answered my prayers. He enabled me to live my life. I had a lot of challenges as, particularly around seventh grade, I would say. And I can say that at that time, something happened to me at that time, which I have not shared with very many people. A light would come at night. Mm-hmm. And every night I would give my troubles to this light. And I would promise that if it took the troubles for the night, I would take them back in the day. And because of that, I could sleep at night and I could carry on my life.
Oh, beautiful.
And I associated that life with Christ.
Uh-huh.
But I could see only the feet, the light, and then there were feet. I never saw a face, but I always associated it with Christ. It was just all I can say, it was pure, unconditional love.
Mm-hmm. And that continued?
That continued throughout, never left me.
Mm-hmm. I believe when you came to Baba, you came with a set of 10 questions on your mind, and the journey sort of came to a logical conclusion with an inner vision. Please tell us about that.
Yeah, actually the inner vision was sort of midway. And those questions, that piece of paper has disappeared. I looked for it to see what they were, you know, again, to remember them. But I can't find it anymore. But when I got on the bus, I know it was 10 questions. I know they were all answered because when I got on the bus, only 9 of them were answered. And I remember excusing Baba for not answering
the tenth one
because the tenth one was a request, actually. Please let me see Sai Gita.
Baba's pet elephant.
Yeah, but Sai Gita was outside the ashram, and I had made a vow early on that I wouldn't leave the ashram. So I said, okay, he's excused from that one because I have made this choice that I won't leave the ashram. And what happened was we got on the bus to go get on the plane. I guess at that time they were allowing flights to put a Parthian that we had taken one. So as we left, I turned around and did namaskar to the road receding behind us. And as I turned, for the very briefest moment, it was just not even a second, I saw Sai Gita in her little hut. It couldn't even be a fraction of a second that you could see it. You know, you had to turn exactly the right time. And there was my 10th question. My 10th question answered.
The request was also answered.
Yeah. And the most important question, as I said yesterday, was what is the relationship of your form to Christ's form? How I wanted to know, are you the second coming? But that experience that I described is how what I took to be the answer to that question. And that question, actually, the question, you know, for Christians, that's a question in need of correction. And that happened over many years.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, in that moment, that was the answer. Yeah.
And I know you spoke about it in your speech, inspiring speech. For the sake of Radio Sai listeners who are tuned to Radio Sai right now, would you like to just elaborate on it, please?
Yeah. One day during darshan, it so happened that I was seated directly in front of the path that Swami would take from the interview room or the mandir to exit Sai Kalwant Hall. So he was walking directly toward me. And as he walked toward me, in my mind's eye, I saw first Swami, then Christ, then Swami, then Christ. It wasn't something that I imagined or that I was thinking of. It sort of was like a stamp on my mind. And it was so pronounced and unusual that I thought to myself, what is that? And then he turned the corner and passed me.
Mm-hmm.
And also I heard some hymns at the same time. Not hymns, but carols being sung. They were practicing them in the Purnachandra. And one of them was... and Christ shall live forevermore. I think the way the actual line is, and man mm-hmm. shall live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. But what I heard was, and Christ shall live forevermore. As he exited, I know I didn't talk about this yesterday, but as he exited the door, you know, the gate, I heard, and Christ shall live forevermore because of Christmas Day. I heard them sing it three times. After that darshan, I asked my mom and sister, did you hear they sang the carol incorrectly? And they said, no, we didn't notice or didn't hear. And so the next day when they performed, I wanted to hear how they sang it. They sang it correctly. So I don't know, but that's what I heard. Mm-hmm. So I saw that, and then I heard, and Christ shall live forevermore because of Christmas Day.
Beautiful.
So
that resolved and gave you the perfect answer.
Yeah, that, I considered that to be an answer at that time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, eventually then that answer expanded and expanded, and I began to understand that all names and forms are him. And if I believe he's the second coming, then he's the second coming. If not, then he's not. But he is divine being.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful. Very profound. Now, in light of the Mahasamadhi, what you're saying becomes very, very significant. The ability to receive this wisdom and the light from within. And in your case, you did not have an interview or a physical contact.
Yes. My sister, my mother, my father, and myself, actually two sisters, have all been to Prashanti. And we've all been very often, we've been fortunate enough to come with great frequency since 1995.
Oh, wow.
And we have never had an interview. We have, he has never spoken to us. And he's never given us Padmanabhaskar. But we always felt, or I should say I let my sisters and my mother speak for themselves, but they feel the same way I do. We always felt that he was paying extraordinary attention to us. And I can give you a few examples.
Please
that
do.
These are just, but I mean, there's so much. For instance, my mother is allergic to bees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of thing now which if she's stung, that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can die. She carries a kit with her. And in Prashanti, that's a little bit scary because you have to walk, you know, I mean, people would come and rescue you, but I'm sure it would be a slow process maybe to get to the hospital. So we came one year and we were put on, I think it was the third floor. And as we arrived at that floor, and as we're walking to our room, my mother looks across the courtyard. And here is, you know, the kind of beehives they
yes.
have. They're as tall as myself. I don't know. They're huge. I don't know how long it takes for a beehive like that to be constructed, if it's a year, a couple months, or what. But it was this huge beehive. And my mother said, we're going to have to go to maintenance right away and tell them to take that down. She said, I can't stay here. And we were so tired. We said, Mom, Baba will protect you. Just let's go into the room and go to darshan, and then we can think about going to maintenance or whatever. And she was very worried, but that's what we did. And we went off to darshan, put our things in the room, went off to darshan, then spoke to no one. When we came back to the room, and the beehive was gone.
Oh.
And there was no evidence of it.
Oh.
It was gone.
He took your concern to heart immediately.
Took my mother's concern to heart. And another occasion, my mother had this thought. I think this happened on the first trip. She just had this thought. It was not a prayer. It was not. It just a thought. The thought was, I wish you would look into my eyes. Now, my mother has varicose veins, so she likes to miss the lines. Just like people like to get line one, she liked to get no lines. So she would she would get up very early and go and peel pineapples in the Western canteen until she thought she missed the lines, and she always thought she had bad luck if she got there and the lines were still in session. So this one day after she had this thought, the people in the canteen said, okay, canteen's closed. We don't have no breakfast today. I mean, I don't know what that's all about, but it was some special event, and they said, you're going to have to go off to darshan now. My mother said, but give me something. You must have some work somewhere that I can do. And they said, nope, Mary, go off, to darshan. She pleaded with them to let her stay. She didn't want to go back to the room. They kicked her out. Finally, she went, and sure enough, there were the lines, you know. So the Save-A-Dolls herded her in, made her sit down. And She got line one. She got row one. Swami walked in, stood in front of the person next to her, and looked straight into my mother's eyes.
Oh.
Yeah, lots of stories like that.
Yeah, this is very nice. So share another one if it comes to mind.
I had one like that too. I had a thought. I helped out. I'm fortunate enough to belong to the Arcadia Center, this absolutely wonderful center in Arcadia, California, at the homes of Dr. Narendranath and Dr. Haima Reddy. It's one of the gifts that Swami has given to me. And through that, so many things have come, like opportunities for seva and just so much growth. The study circle is unbelievable. And it's all free, you know. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You pay thousands of dollars to go to these, workshops, to ratchet up your spiritual whatever, And yet the real thing is always for free. And here in the Sai organization, we're so fortunate. Anyway, one of the things, opportunities that has come to me is to help out at medical camps. So I was helping out at this medical camp and I had a thought. I love animals. So this is the thought. What about the animals, Swami? This is great for humans. What about the animals? Well, then I think Dr. Reddy or somebody went and made a report to Swami and came back and reported to the center that Swami had said in reply to the report about the center, he had said this phrase, what about the animals?
Oh.
I thought that was really
beautiful, resonating
cool.
What
yeah.
was on your mind.
Yeah.
So we don't have to care only for our fellow human beings, but also for the animals.
Oh, no, absolutely. And not only that,
all creation.
That, which was the message yesterday from the South African group, a beautiful play they gave. Yeah, it's so important now. The planet Earth is, I believe it's a living being.
So, breathing, living
being. Yes, I believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Now, but Bhagwan's Mahasamadhi, which was a difficult event for most of us, took place at Easter. In your opinion, what does it signify, Dr. Ellens?
The Mahasamadhi, it works in two directions for me. One is, as I said yesterday, it is a commentary on Easter, and Easter is a commentary on it. And how is it a commentary on Easter? Well, I think that Sai devotees, this is kind of an irony, but mm-hmm. they're positioned uniquely to really understand some of the things in the New Testament texts. Huh. What it was that Christians went through when Jesus was crucified, mm-hmm. the pain and the sense of loss and despair and sorrow that perhaps many Sai devotees felt at that time. We're uniquely positioned to understand on a very concrete level what the texts mean in that regard. And in the other direction, in the direction of Easter being a commentary on the Mahasamadhi, I think that the message is very clear. This is not the end. The Mahasamadhi was not the end. It's the beginning. Christianity flourished to become a vehicle for countless numbers of people to make their way to the divine. And same with Sai.
Mm-hmm.
Mahasamadhi or no,
Well, yes. That's profound. Yes. What you say absolutely makes sense, and it sort of sorts itself out, the whole event. At this point in time in the conversation, we should perhaps play one of your favorite bhajans, Dr. Ellens, and then we'll continue the conversation further. Now, which one is it going to be?
Jaya Jagadisha Hare.
Coming up, dear listeners, a favorite bhajan of Dr. Ellens, Jaya Jagadisha Hare.
Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Jai Govinda Hare Jai Jagadish Hare Jai Govinda Hare Brahmananda, Brahmananda, Jaya Gopal Hare. Jai Gopal Hare Arunachal Shiva जय देवी भारती विद्यादायिनी अन्नपूर्णा माताओ जय जगदीश हरे जय गोविंद हरे नित्यानंद ब्रह्मानंद जय गोपाल हरे अरुणाचल शिव त्रिशूलधार शिव विद्यादायिनी अन्नपूर्णा माता जय देवी भारती विद्यादायिनी अन्नपूर्णा माता जगदीश हरे जय
Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You're tuned to Asia, Radio Sai's Asia Stream on December the 27, 2012. My name is Karuna and we are in conversation with Dr. Deborah Ellens, an independent scholar of theology from Claremont, California, USA. The bhajan that you just heard was one of Dr. Ellens' favorites. So let's continue with the interview. Now, Dr. Ellens, before we go any further, tell us how exactly you came to Swami.
Okay, well, it involves some subtleties, so I hope I don't bore you, and if I do, please give me the T sign. I went to a workshop which involved a panel at my graduate school. It was about how to get a job after you graduated. They had a panel of people, and one of the persons was a woman in my church who was getting a second PhD, and she had just gotten a job at Princeton Seminary. So she was telling how to actually go through the interview process. Mm-hmm. She described it. She said you go to SBL, which is our guild, Society of Biblical Literature, and you sit in the interview room and draw a figure eight with yourself in one side and the interviewers on the other side. And then she went on, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I thought this was back in the 90s, so mm-hmm. this was a very strange statement for somebody in academia to make. When they asked questions, I wanted to raise my hand and say, could we go back to the figure eight? I want to know about that. But I didn't have the courage to ask. And I never had the opportunity to ask her. You know, she left and got her job.
So the visualization of the figure eight.
I don't know what she meant by it. But anyway, she mentioned this figure eight. So one day I went to a used bookstore. I just forgot about the figure eight. I found a book title called Cutting the Ties That Bind in the used book section. And I thought, I could probably use that. Mm-hmm. So I took it off the shelf and I just flipped the pages and there, lo and behold, was the figure eight. So I thought, oh my goodness, here it is. I'm going to read it.
Phyllis Crystal's book.
I took that, I bought it, I brought it home. And Phyllis Crystal, as you know, mentions Swami twice in that book. Once in the latter pages and she dedicates it to her guru, Sri Satya Sai Baba. Okay, nothing else she says about Sai Baba. But I began to practice this figure eight, and it was a very powerful exercise. I then called the stamp, the number on the stamp. It was the Tustin Book Center. I don't know why I did that, but I called them, and I said, I would like to have an appointment with this author. They said, she doesn't do it anymore, but so-and-so does it. So I made an appointment, and I did this figure eight. It was very successful, you know, very helpful. This woman told me that Phyllis had a conference. So I went to the conference. At that time, I was a little bit, I would never have called it depressed at that time. But because of what happened, I realized it was a little depressed. I walked into this conference hall early. The minute I walked in, I shouldn't say I was depressed. I don't know how to do it. But when I walked in, I just felt all this light, this radiance.
And from where? From a person?
I don't know.
All around you?
Yeah, just it was just this feeling that came over me
I
walked into the conference. And it was because of that, I associated that with Swami. On the way home, I said a prayer. I said, if you're for real, I did not associate it with Phyllis. I associated it with this person, Sri Satya Sai Baba.
And in the workshop, was it about Swami?
No.
One of her techniques?
No.
She was teaching you the techniques?
No. Oh, yeah, she was teaching the techniques. But no, it was not about Swami. Mm-hmm. In fact, she said that her work did not have to do with Swami at that mm-hmm. time. Anyway, so I said a prayer, and this is the point. I said, if you're for real, then send me some books. And I don't have a lot of money, so send them to me for real cheap. So mm-hmm. the next day, I went to the bookstore, and only time this ever happened, in the used book section was an entire shelf of Sai books, all classics, 75 cents, 50 cents, 25 cents, all the old classics. I bought like 3/4 of them, mm-hmm. Because I felt guilty buying that many of them, so I left a few, and then the next day I went back and bought all the rest of them. And then I began to read them and send them to my mother. Uh-huh. And my mother, began to read them as well. And I got this intense yearning to go see this person. I could barely bear it. And I prayed, please let me come and see you. Well, shortly after that, my mom called and she said, I forget if she discovered a center or she discovered a conference or something. Anyway, she said, I'm going to a conference. That was wonderful. At the conference, she met a woman. When she came back from the conference, she said to me, there's a woman I met there and she's going to put a party. Would you like to come with me?
Oh.
I said, Mom, I'd love to, but I don't have the money. She said, your dad is paying.
Ooh.
So that's how it happened. And from that time forward, it's just been nonstop. And one of the things that happened, I'll tell you another thing. This is, I had this, Swami is so beautiful and just, full of, indescribable. And because of that, all my own fault, not because of that, but all my own faults began to sort of march before my face. And I, not that I had, a lot of faults, but all the faults that are there began to march before my face. Anyway, I was crying deeply about, just about these things. And I said this prayer, Swami, I need you so much, but I don't deserve you. I need you so much, but I don't deserve you. Then I have this book that had a collection, one of the books I bought had a collection of excerpts from Swami's discourses and stuff.
Yeah.
I opened it up and on the page it said, if you need me, you deserve me.
Perfect answer. Just what you needed to hear.
Right there, yeah.
Right there. And you've had...
And that is the unconditional, that is the same unconditional love that I experienced in Christ. This is the thing. There is no one, I don't care who it is, outside of his love and his care. No one. I don't care. No, nothing, no one. And I just felt complete. I don't know. I feel complete and total acceptance. I feel like he's paying attention to me all the time, even if I've never had an interview, never had Padnamskar, never had any of these things. I feel like he's always paying attention to me and my family.
And I think that realization and that survival skill is what's coming in handy in light of the Mahasamadhi, because you were not using the crutches of the physical contact. You were already tuned to the inner connection. And
although I felt a lot of grief at the Mahasamadhi, and this is a very interesting thing, because at the Mahasamadhi, I had a huge question. The question was, are you still looking at me?
Mm-hmm.
Are you still seeing me? Because it was almost as if I went retrograde with the form,
mm-hmm.
The living
mm-hmm.
form, and then had to make the adjustment again to the formless. I ran across a quote that said, Swami said, if the devotee asks, are you looking at me? God is looking at him
mm-hmm.
or her.
Mm-hmm.
If the devotee asks, are you walking with me? God is walking with that devotee. If you ask, are you hearing me? God is hearing. Yeah.
At all times.
Yeah.
You have many other fond memories of connecting with Swami when he was in the form and he responded, even though it was a non-verbal form of communication.
Oh, I can tell you one more, yeah. On my first visit, he would leave to go to the hospital, and
mm-hmm.
I would just have this yearning, please don't leave. And if you leave, only a few minutes, okay, come right back. And I would sit there in first row. My sister, too, we would never leave the hall as long as they allowed us to stay there. Anyway, one day he was leaving, and I had this thought, and the thought was, look at that. He's leaving, and he's not even acknowledging us. He's not looking at us, and he's not smiling. So when Swami returned, he looked my direction, and he gave this huge, pronounced grin, like, showing his teeth and everything.
Smiling really hard at you. So he's really satisfied. You got your answer very clearly.
Yeah.
See, it was almost like he was reading each person's mind, but at the same time, he was able to respond to several thousand prayers at once.
Absolutely.
Even in his form.
This is the thing. It's so amazing.
It is. Dr. Ellens, you know your Bible better than many of us do. Where do you find Sanatan Dharma in the Holy Bible?
Okay. Well, would you like to tell me what Sanatana Dharma is to you?
To me, it's an understanding of a way of life that Bhagwan has described, which is based on the five human values of love, truth, peace, nonviolence, and right conduct.
Yeah. I think you find it everywhere. Everywhere you go, you have all the religious traditions have this, these five human values in them. And if you, whatever the restrictions are of that particular tradition, if you follow any one of these, you'll burst the bonds. You know, you'll make it to the goal. Does that answer your question?
It does. So in the Bible, all the Gospels.
Yeah, Jesus says, they asked him, they said, what is the greatest commandment? He said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And, you know, I had a dear friend, Dr. Chaim Arendt, in fact, told me, reminded me, or brought to my attention, not reminded me, but brought to my attention, the correspondence between this text and also Corinthians 13, which Dr. Reddy often quotes and brings up in study circle, between that and chapter 12 of the Bhagavad Gita. And this morning I was reading that and thought, oh, wow, what a, you know, how much genius is there in that, in understanding that, that correspondence. It's, you find it in that statement by Jesus. You find it here in the Bhagavad Gita. You find it in Corinthians 13, in which they talk about love. What is love? Love is patience. It's no jealousy. It's equal-mindedness, you know, forbearance.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're an independent scholar in your own right. What are your impressions of Advaita in relation to religions that promote exclusivity? Basically, this debate of monism versus monotheism.
Yes. Well, I don't really think there's a debate because Advaitism is the most powerful conceptual system that I've run across. I mean, it's just actually I'm enjoying exploring all the implications of this particular system. This is one of the things I'm most grateful to Swami about, and it's one of the things I value about the study circle that I attend in Arcadia. It has room for everything. I had a professor in college. I went to a Christian college, so this professor once said to us, and he meant it pejoratively, but actually it was the truth, but actually it's not a pejorative statement. What he said was, Hinduism swallows everything.
That's huge.
Yeah. I like to say it, in other words, it was a little bit of a warning, you know, Hinduism swallows everything. But I'd like to say it this way. Hinduism has room for everything. Advaitism has room for everything. So let's say
Sanatana
that...
Sanatana Dharma. It's all embracing, all inclusive.
Yes. But I mean perhaps the person who believes that, you know, there's only one way and
yeah.
only one form
yeah.
is perhaps, if they follow one of the five human values, even with that restriction, they'll make it to where Advaitism is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But Advaitism has room even for that particular stance, Advaitism.
That's right.
Advaitism has room for it. In fact, Advaitism is, if I believe the time is coming when all of the religious traditions will avail themselves of that conceptual tool, because that's really what could help all of us to understand one another. We had the church where my husband is an elder has a temple exchange with the local synagogue. And one of the things they do is they have this like Sunday school program with the Jewish congregation. So one time in this Sunday school exchange, one of the members of the Jewish congregation raises his hand and he says, "Why is it that you Christians say you believe in one God when you believe in two?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of the Presbyterians could get it. What do you mean? We don't believe in two. Yes, he said, you do. Jesus and the formless God. That's one. That's two. They said, no, that's only one. There was no language to sort of bridge the gap between he was absolutely right, and they were absolutely right.
Mm.
But Advaitism is the conceptual tool that enables us to understand these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a powerful, wonderful, beautiful tool.
Mm-hmm. And even when it comes to religions that don't believe in a form, that insist on a formless God, Advaitism, yes. Like Islam, for instance.
Yeah. Oh, formless God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Those are very powerful insights. Thank you very much for sharing them with our listeners, Dr. Ellens.
You're welcome.
Well, dear listeners, I'm sure you really enjoyed this conversation, and I would love to hear your feedback and your thoughts on what we just heard from Dr. Ellens. As always, you can reach us by email. Our email ID is listener@radiosci.org. Now, before we move on to the next program, let's wind up this segment with Dr. Ellens by playing a bhajan of her choice. Another one. So which one is it going to be? Kala Titaya coming up at Dr. Ellens' request.
Kalatitaya Siddhirupaya Yogeshwaraya Namo. Kalatitaya Siddhirupaya Yogeshwaraya Namo. Jagadhitaya Vishwarupaya Jagadhitaya Vishwarupaya Shivaya Shivaya Namo Om Namah Shivaya Shivaya Namo Om Namah Shivaya Shivaya Namo Om Namah Shivaya Shivaya Jagadhitaya Vishwarupaya Satyasaishwaraya Namo Om Namah Shivaya Shivaya 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 Namo Shivaya Shivaya Namo Kalatitaya Siddhirupaya Yogeshwaraya Namo
Sai's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Sairam, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Coming up next is a conversation with a group of four Australian youth that I had the pleasure to sit down with yesterday. Since some of them were leaving this morning and we could not have them in the studio for a live conversation, we recorded it a day prior. Among the group were two lawyers, a graduate student, and a practicing dentist from Australia. I hope you will find this interview as refreshing, honest, and as touching as I did. So here's the discussion that was recorded with the Australian youth on December 26, 2012. Sairam, dear listeners, I have four young adults from the Australian group here in the studio right now. And the first person we're going to be talking to is Veena Sri Anand Raja from Sydney, Australia. Veena holds a Bachelor of Law degree and a Bachelor of Arts in Communication. She works as a legal counsel and is also the National Youth Coordinator and Coordinator of Christmas 2013 decorations. Sairam, Veena, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam, thank you so much for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you. So tell our listeners, why are you all here today?
With the blessings of Swami, a few youth in Australia over the last 12 months have received dreams from Swami in which he implored us to come to Prashanthi and spend some quality time with him. So we all decided to undertake a year of satsang and spiritual exercises, and here we are 12 months later. We are enjoying the Christmas celebrations and focusing on our heart-to-heart connection with Swami.
Oh, that's very interesting to know. Let me turn to your colleague here. We now have Garshini Ganeshanandam with us. She's from Canberra. And Garshini is a graduate in Bachelor's of Law and Psychology. And she's also the Youth Coordinator for the Australian Capital Territory, or ACT, from the year 2009 and 2011. I guess your term is done now. Sairam, Garshini.
Sairam, Aunty.
Would you like to tell Radio Sai listeners what motivated you to undertake this long journey involving so much expense, holiday time, and inconvenience?
Ultimately, it's been a blessing being able to come back to Prashanthi Nilayam. I don't necessarily see it as an inconvenience, but by the grace of Swami and Swami's blessings and His will, I have come here. And what has motivated me is my love for Swami and wanting to reconnect with Him and have His darshan and be in His presence all the time. I've begun a process of self-inquiry, as many of the youth have, and it's just been a complete blessing without any inconvenience or any other kind of obstacles.
Oh, good. That's nice to hear. And Veena, let me pose this question to you. What is so special or unique about youth pilgrimages? These are becoming very popular by the day, and we see young adults from the Sai movement coming to Prashanthi from various countries. So what is so unique about them?
The beauty and unique feature of a youth pilgrimage is that, unlike when you come as an individual or as a member of a family, it's very easy to get consumed in yourself and your thoughts. When we come as one dynamic group, we collectively focus on Swami, and we know how much Swami loves discipline and unity. So the little I gets lost in the big we, and eventually through the big we join the big I, that is Swami. So the fantastic element of youth pilgrimages is that group mentality, and as a group focusing on and loving Swami, we also love the fact that we get to forget about our little selves for a while and collectively focus on Swami.
Up next is Amit Tappu from Sydney, Australia. Amit is a graduate of Law and Psychology from the University of Sydney. And currently, Amit is working as a tax lawyer. And he has been involved in the Australian Sai movement since early 2011. And he has been a devotee of Baba since 2003. Sairam, Amit.
Sairam, Aunty.
How has the experience been so far?
It's been beautiful. It's been so lovely to come here and visit our mother and to get blessings from the Samadhi and just be surrounded by this beautiful, holy atmosphere. This is when the churning happens. This is where, I guess, the unpleasant aspects of our ego sort of boil and bubble to the surface, and we need to deal with that. But it's so easy to deal with it over here as opposed to back home. So it's just a beautiful experience from a bird's eye point of view.
Do you feel you have undergone some churning?
I always undergo churning over here.
This is not your first visit?
No, no. This is my third visit, actually.
And what would you say was your best moment or best moments in this trip?
There have been so many beautiful moments. We've been so blessed by Swami. I think, just to name a few, we got the opportunity to lead morning pageants on the 21st of December.
And you sang so well. Everybody was admiring how well the Australian youth sang.
It's all Swami's blessings. We were just so grateful to be a part of that experience. And we also got to, luckily, I think the New Zealand devotees invited us to help them with Christmas decorations inside Coolwind Hall.
So the Aussies and the Kiwis were working.
One of the few times you'll see us working together. And we had a great time. It was just such a blessing. But I think the standout moment for me was actually we were sitting in the Western Canteen a couple of mornings ago, and we ran into Father Charles Ogata, and we had a beautiful satsang with him, and he just reinforced our faith in Swami, and it was just so beautiful.
Oh, it's nice to hear such positive feedback from young adults. Great. Let's turn to Ruben now.
Sairam Aunty.
Sairam Ruben. Ruben Mahadeva is from Perth, Australia, and he holds a Bachelor of Dental Science from the University of Western Australia and is currently working as a dental surgeon. Ruben is also the National Youth Coordinator of the SAI Youth of Australia. So my question to you, Ruben, is what are you going to take back from here?
As Amit mentioned, we had a lovely satsang with Father Charles Ogata at the Western Canteen. It was very unexpected. And he was very inspiring. And the key message that he shared with us was to always be happy. And he just kept saying that. And you could see that he really lived that message. And that, for me, was very inspiring. And then soon after, I think it was the International Choir, right at the end of the choir, Swami, they had a recorded speech.
In Bhagwan's voice.
Yes, an interlude. And Swami said the exact same thing, always be happy, always be happy. And when I contemplate on that and reflect on it, I feel that that is a synthesis of all teachings, isn't it? It's just to always be happy.
Is it hard to be young, living in a first world country and be happy? Is it challenging? You'd think, sitting from where we are, that, you know, people in Australia live good lives, they have all their basic needs met with, and young people would be happy. But I think clinical depression still continues to be an issue.
They call those things first world problems. Yeah, even in first world countries, you had those kind of things. But, you know, coming to India always puts things into perspective, especially for us.
It's a real reality check, isn't it?
Very much so, yes.
Yeah. We have both extremes.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah. And that's why I think we always come back, is because of that. You know, it just helps us to be gracious, always helps us to always be thankful of what we've received from Swami.
Garshi, I'd like to ask you the next question. Do you see yourself coming back to Prashanthi Nilayam in the near future? And if so, why?
Auntie, I most certainly do see myself coming back to Prashanthi. This is where I feel my home truly is. Back home in Australia, it's my home away from home. And every time I come back here, I feel so much more connected with Swami. Even though I know that Swami is always in my heart, but there's a presence that we feel in Prashanthi Nilayam that's unlike anything else. At the end of the day, though, we've always learned from Swami's teachings that nothing will happen without His will. So I definitely have the intention of coming back to Prashanthi in the very near future. Yet, at the same time, if Swami wills it, I will be here. Or if Swami wills me to be here another time, then that's when I will be here. Also, next year Australia is heading the team for Christmas 2013 decorations, and I would very much like to be here for it, to be a part of that, assisting in decorating Swami's beautiful Coolwind Hall and all around Puttaparthi, not around Puttaparthi, the ashram.
Prashanthi Nilayam.
Prashanthi Nilayam.
And the Kiwis have set a very high standard, so you really have to meet up that, break that benchmark and go beyond it.
They certainly have set a high standard. Luckily for us, we had the opportunity to assist in the decorations
this year.
So we've had some training leading up to it. Hopefully we can meet those standards and go above and beyond that as well.
Well, we're quite looking forward to Christmas 2013 now, seeing that the Australians are going to be working really hard.
We certainly will be.
Great. Ruben, as a young adult, you have have many important life decisions to make at this stage in your life, your career, family, economic success and whatnot. In your list of priorities, where does Baba figure?
Oh God, you sound like my mom.
I am a mom. Once a mom, always a mom.
Oh, list of priorities. You know, Swami is always at the top. For mm-hmm. me, Swami is always at the top. He's the only priority on that list. You know, there was a time where I used to always think about those questions that you posed. Career, family,
nice
economic
success,
all those things. You know, and I used to rack my brains a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom used to always ask, when are the kids coming? Because we have recently married. And the answer I would always give is, it's Swami's will. All these things are Swami's will. And I'm reminded about a story that I feel it was very important for me in addressing a lot of these issues that every youth tends to face. It's something that you can't really run away from, but there was a story about a poor man who mm-hmm. was walking by and he saw a Swamiji,
mm-hmm.
this sannyasi or renunciant, and he was sitting there meditating, and he would be there every single day, and there would be devotees around him, and mm-hmm. people would bring him all sorts of money, gifts, and food, and put it at his feet. And the yogi had no interest in all that, but he used to receive it all the time. He would just give away the money. But this man, being poor, wanted wealth. He craved for it. So he thought, maybe if I dressed up as a yogi and sat in meditation and pretended to be a yogi, people would come around me and give me a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that. He didn't tell his wife. And he did that for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. No money.
Mm.
He received nothing. So he was at his wit's end. So then he decided to go back to the Swami. And he went back and he said, look, Swami, you know I've done this. I'm ashamed of doing this, but I did it because I wanted money. What is the secret to your success? And the Swami looked at him and he said, you know, fortune is a flirt. The more you run after it, it'll play hard to get. But the moment you have no desire for it, it will fall at your feet. And I found that really a really inspiring story. When especially when people ask me about money and career and all that, I think, you know, if we leave it at Swami's feet, if we leave all these decisions to Swami, he will find out the best way for us. He will find out the best time for us to start a family or to start a career. And I feel that's the easiest way.
Now, hearing you lends itself to the question, what about all the stuff that people read, like The Secret? Dream it, it will
yes.
happen. But if you're going to leave everything at Swami's lotus feet,
yes.
and you don't make the power of intention, you don't use that power to make it happen, is it really going to happen? These are two different trains of thought.
Seemingly yes, but I feel no, because if we have strong faith in the self, in God, God is everything. So if we put our attention or our thoughts or attention onto God, everything that we desire for will be ours. I feel, okay. yeah, so whatever desire we may have, will be fulfilled in one way or another, because our focus is on God.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So focus on the important thing. If you focus on God, all else will follow.
That's it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way, yes.
Has it worked out that way for you? Do you believe it has?
Yes, in my experience, I feel it has. Prior to surrender, there's always all sorts of worries I used to have about things. And even when I received these things, I wouldn't be satisfied. I would want to wish that it came to me in another way. But then looking back, in retrospect, I realized that Swami always knew best.
Mm-hmm.
So then, instead of worrying all the time, I just surrendered to him, and I just feel now, as I'm a bit older now, I feel that I just leave these sort of decisions to him. Yes.
That's a lot of maturity. No. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Auntie.
My next question is for Amit Tapu, a successful tax lawyer. Amit, given the distractions of the world and the Sai ideals that Bhagwan has laid out before us, how do you deal with things like peer pressure, media influence, and still stay inspired? Is it a challenge?
I think it'll always be a challenge.
How do you deal with it?
With peer pressure, I think it was much more of a challenge when I was younger and I didn't have the awareness of Swami being with me all the time. But I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten more experience, and certainly from my fellow youth and from Swami's teachings directly, I know that he's with me at every moment. And so it, you know, peer pressure, with peer pressure, you find it hard to say no sometimes, but when you remember that Swami is standing right next to you, you have that confidence and you know that you don't want to disappoint Swami, so you can easily say no to the things that will lead you away from God.
What if it makes you unpopular with your friends?
I think you have to have the attitude that come what may, I'm going to follow you, Swami. And that's been my practice.
Has it paid off?
It has always paid off.
Have you lost friends in that?
I've lost plenty of friends in that process. But this is all for my highest good. And now I have a wonderful group of friends sitting around me now and who have come with me on this pilgrimage and even back home with the Sai Youth. I've just been so blessed with a new wonderful group of friends. Mm-hmm. But I guess with media and such, I don't think that all media is negative or poisonous. I think there's a social media, network that's sort of come up very recently, in fact. And you only need to look to examples like Soul Jones and things like that to see the benefit that has on society. And so if you can use your discrimination, again using Swami's teachings, if you can use your discrimination and choose, you know, what you choose to imbibe through your senses, then I think, you can derive sweetness from all areas of life.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially that's how I deal with it.
Great. Veena, you are a legal counsel in Sydney, Australia. And in more ways than one, you represent the future of the Satya Sai mission abroad. How do you feel about this responsibility?
I think the key word of that question is responsibility. There have been moments when I have felt overwhelmed at the thought of the amazing work that lays ahead of me, especially in the next 12 months. Our term as National Youth Coordinators is for a minimum of 2 years. But especially with the Christmas 2013 preparations already underway, there have been moments lately where I have sat down and actually had a heart-to-heart with Swami and asked, how did you think it was me who would be right for this job? But then I realized the issue lies in the word responsibility and the misconception that it's my responsibility. So very quickly, my conversation with Swami became, how are you, Swami, going to get all this work done through me? So the simple truth is I do not feel a sense of responsibility because I know it is not me that does this work. Veena is but another little clog in the machine that is Sai, and Swami will do his bidding through me. What I pray for is that he gives me enough love and wisdom to get out of his way.
So that he may flow through you.
Exactly.
Not be an obstacle.
Exactly.
Hmm.
And I do feel that as Swami's children, our future can be nothing but bright and beautiful and blessed. And Swami has said that to us many a time in his interactions with the Australian youth group. And we choose to believe that the Lord will provide and the Lord will protect.
Very inspiring to hear. Ruben, you are a successful dentist and you're also the youth coordinator in Australia, the Sai Youth Coordinator. In an ideal Sai world, in your opinion, what would you like to see more of or different?
Oh, aren't we living in one?
We are. But would you like to see something different? Or more of something?
Yes.
Or less of something?
Yeah, I can see. You know, at times I do think that. At times I see all this violence and I see, you know, how animals are being treated. And I see all this inequality in the world. And quite often I do think, you know, Swami, why are you doing this? And wouldn't it be better if we were all happy? But then when I think about it a bit deeper, I realize that, you know, all these things are just ways in which he can teach us, in which he can cleanse us. And they all have a purpose, they all have a function. And to say that his world is not perfect is to say that Swami doesn't know what he's doing, mm-hmm. you know? And when I think about it, I realize that, you know, everything is perfect in his world. And I feel that this world is just a place for all of us to cleanse our emotions, control our anger, and get rid of our desires. And more importantly, to change ourselves, rather than trying to change the world, you know? And I remember Swami has said that one of the highest service that we as individuals can do is to realize our true self. And it makes sense to me because when we are in touch with our higher self, our true self, the God within, I feel that every interaction we have with others around us, things in this world will be saturated with pure love. And I think that's probably the best service that we can do in this world.
Do you feel that love when you're doing a tooth extraction, for instance, or a root canal?
I do, especially when these patients come with a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a good example because a lot of times when I'm doing those procedures, they are in a lot of pain, but it's temporary. And the moment the procedure is done, they feel so much relief and they thank me for it. They thank me for putting them through this pain. And I think that's the same way with us and Swami. You know, we instead of thinking how can we change the world, we should say thank you for putting us through this pain and through these trials and tribulations because it's only making us better.
Mm-hmm. And in the world of Sai that we live in, you are a youth coordinator, and many of your activities outside of work and family will be connected to your Sai Center activities. In that area, do you see any particular areas that could be different or more or less to make things more effective or efficient?
I think communication.
Mm-hmm.
Communication is a key thing.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a lot of times in Sai Centers, because in Australia, for example, it's a multicultural society, so there are people from different backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of migrants from other countries coming to Australia. And when they are migrants, they always want to preserve their culture in the organization. And this often can create conflict, you know, because they don't want to relinquish their religious practices. And we all have to be mindful that in the country that we are in, we should try to adopt the local cultures and the local practices so that we can integrate and spread Swami's message and have a more universal mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel these areas are areas that I feel that as youth we should focus, we should try to assist the Sai organization to improving. Yes, and so in short, I feel we should broaden our vision and deepen our understanding of these sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's a very interesting insight. Thank you very much, Ruben, Veena, Garshi, and Amit for your time and for joining us on Radio Sai.
Thank you, Auntie.
Sairam, Auntie.
Sairam. Thank you so much. Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, you just heard a conversation with a group of young adults from Australia who were in Prashanthi Nilayam for Christmas of 2012. Did you agree with their perspective as Sai youth? And what are your thoughts on their understanding of their roles and responsibilities? Please do share your feedback with us. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. The time right now in our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam is 10:45 a.m. Today is the 27th of December 2012. And you're listening to the last Morning Glory segment of Thursday Live for this year, because I will meet you again on next Thursday, which will be in 2013 on the other side. It's now time for me to offer my hosting efforts along with those of my colleague, audio editor Yatharta, and now Abhishek at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. Here's bidding you a loving Sairam till we meet next Thursday on Morning Glory. And on behalf of the entire team here at Radio Sai, here is wishing all our listeners a fantastic 2013. May Bhagwan's divine grace and blessings be upon you always. Till we meet again, please be well, keep seeking, and do whatever it takes to stay inspired. And now I leave you with a beautiful bhajan from our Sai Blossom product, which is volume 6 of our Bhavanjali series. Here is Prem Amrit Bharsao Sai in Brother Ravi Kumar's voice. Sai.
प्रेमामृत बरसाओ बाबा प्रेमामृत बरसाओ बाबा
प्रेमामृत बरसाओ बाबा
दया करो भगवान करो भगवान
करो भगवान
दया करो भगवान
करो भगवान
कृपा करो प्रेमामृत बरसाओ बाबा
प्रेमामृत बरसाओ बाबा
तुम्हारी दया बिन कैसा जीवन तुम्हारी दया बिन कैसा जीवन
तुम्हारी दया बिन कैसा जीवन
रोम रोम में बसने वाले
रोम रोम में बसने
रोम रोम में बसने वाले
रोम रोम में बसने वाले
जन्म मरण से पार उतारो उतारो
जन्म मरण से पार उतारो
दया करो भगवान
दया करो भगवान
कृपा करो भगवान दया करो भगवान
दया करो भगवान
कृपा करो भगवान
कृपा करो भगवान
प्रेमा अमृत बरसाओ बाबा
अमृत बरसाओ बाबा
दया करो भगवान
करो भगवान
कृपा करो भगवान प्रेमामृत बरसाओ बाबा
प्रेमामृत
दया बिन कैसा जीवन रोम रोम में बसने वाले राम
रोम में बसने वाले राम
रोम रोम में बसने वाले राम जन्म मरण से पार उतारो
जन्म मरण से पार उतारो
दया करो भगवान कृपा करो भगवान दया करो भगवान कृपा करो भगवान प्रेमामृत बरसा